Don Juan felt the weight of our gourds and concluded that we'd exhausted our food supply and that it was time to return home. I casually mentioned that it was going to take us at least a couple of days to get to his house. He said he wasn't going back to Sonora, but to a border town where he had some business to take care of. I thought we were going to start our descent through a water canyon, but Don Juan headed towards the northwest on the high plateaus of the lava mountains. After about an hour of walking, he led me into a deep ravine, which ended at a point where two peaks almost joined. There was a slope there, going almost to the top of the range, a strange slope which looked like a slanted, concave bridge between the two peaks. Don Juan pointed to an area on the face of the slope. "Look there fixedly," he said. "The sun's almost right." He explained that at midday, the light of the sun could help me with not doing. He then gave me a series of commands: to loosen all the tight garments I had on, to sit in a cross-legged position, and to look intently at the spot he had specified. There were very few clouds in the sky, and none towards the west. It was a hot day, and the sunlight beamed on the solidified lava. I kept a very close watch over the area in question. After a long vigil, I asked what, specifically, I was supposed to look for. He made me be quiet with an impatient gesture of his hand. I was tired. I wanted to go to sleep. I half-closed my eyes. They were itching, and I rubbed them. But my hands were clammy, and the sweat made my eyes sting. I looked at the lava peaks through half-closed eyelids, and suddenly, the whole mountain was lit up. I told Don Juan that if I squinted my eyes, I could see the whole range of mountains as an intricate array of light fibers. He told me to breathe as little as possible in order to maintain the view of the light fibers, and not to stare intently into it, but to look casually at a point on the horizon, right above the slope. I followed his instructions and was able to hold the view of an interminable extension covered with a web of light. Don Juan said in a very soft voice that I should try to isolate areas of darkness within the field of light fibers, and that right after finding a dark spot, I should open my eyes and check where that spot was on the face of the slope. I was incapable of perceiving any dark areas. I squinted my eyes and then opened them up various times. Don Juan drew closer to me and pointed to an area to my right, and then to another one right in front of me. I tried to change the position of my body. I thought that perhaps if I shifted my perspective, I would be able to perceive the supposed area of darkness he was pointing to. But Don Juan shook my arm and told me in a severe tone to keep still and be patient. I again squinted my eyes and once more saw the web of light fibers. I looked at it for a moment, and then I opened my eyes wider. At that instant, I heard a faint rumble. It could have easily been explained as the distant sound of a jet plane. And then, with my eyes wide open, I saw the whole range of mountains in front of me as an enormous field of tiny dots of light. It was as if, for a brief moment, some metallic specks in the solidified lava were reflecting the sunlight in unison. Then the sunlight grew dim and was suddenly turned off, and the mountains became a mass of dull, dark brown rock, and at the same time it also became windy and cold. I wanted to turn around to see if the sun had disappeared behind a cloud, but Don Juan held my head and didn't let me move. He said that if I turned, I might catch a glimpse of an entity of the mountains, the ally that was following us. He assured me that I didn't have the necessary strength to stand a sight of that nature, and then he added, in a calculated tone, that the rumble I had heard was the peculiar way in which an ally heralded its presence. He then stood up and announced that we were going to start climbing up the side of the slope. "Where are we going?" I asked. He pointed to one of the areas he had isolated as being a spot of darkness. He explained that not doing had allowed him to single out that spot as a possible center of power, or perhaps as a place where power objects might be found. We reached the spot he had in mind after a painful climb. He stood motionless for a moment, a few feet in front of me. I tried to come closer to him, but he signaled me with his hand to stop. He seemed to be orienting himself. I could see the back of his head moving, as if he were sweeping his eyes up and down the mountain. Then, with sure steps, he led the way to a ledge. He sat down and began to wipe some loose dirt off the ledge with his hand. He dug with his fingers around a small piece of rock that was sticking out, cleaning the dirt around it. Then he ordered me to dig it out. Once I had dislodged the piece of rock, he told me to immediately put it inside my shirt, because it was a power object that belonged to me. He said that he was giving it to me to keep, and that I should polish and care for it. Right after that, we began our descent into a water canyon, and a couple of hours later, we were in the high desert at the foot of the lava mountains. Don Juan walked about 10 feet ahead of me and kept up a very good pace. We went south until just before sunset. A heavy bank of clouds in the west prevented us from seeing the sun, but we paused until it had presumably disappeared over the horizon. Don Juan changed directions then, and headed towards the southeast. We went over a hill, and as we got to the top, I spotted 4 men coming towards us from the south. I looked at Don Juan. We had never encountered people in our excursions, and I didn't know what to do in a case like that. But he didn't seem to be concerned. He kept on walking, as if nothing had happened. The men moved as if they weren't in a hurry. They meandered towards where we were in a leisurely way. When they were closer to us, I noticed that they were 4 young Indians. They seemed to recognize Don Juan. He talked to them in Spanish. They were very soft-spoken and treated him with great deference. Only one of them spoke to me. I asked Don Juan in a whisper if I could also talk to them, and he nodded his head affirmatively. Once I engaged them in conversation, they were very friendly and communicative, especially the one who had first spoken to me. They told me they were there in search of power quartz crystals. They said that they had been wandering around the lava mountains for several days, but they hadn't had any luck. Don Juan looked around and pointed to a rocky area about 200 yards away. "That's a good place to camp for a while," he said. He began to walk towards the rocks, and we all followed him. The area he had selected was very rugged. There were no bushes on it. We sat down on the rocks. Don Juan announced that he was going to go back into the chaparral to gather dry branches for a fire. I wanted to help him, but he whispered to me that this was a special fire for those brave young men, and he didn't need my help. The young men sat down around me in a close cluster. One of them sat with his back against mine. I felt a bit embarrassed. When Don Juan returned with a pile of sticks, he commended them for their carefulness and told me that the young men were a sorcerer's apprentices and that it was the rule to make a circle and have 2 people back to back in the center when going on hunting parties for power objects. One of the young men asked me if I had ever found any crystals myself. I told him that Don Juan had never taken me to look for them. Don Juan selected a place close to a big boulder and started to make a fire. None of the young men moved to help him, but watched him attentively. When all the sticks were burning, Don Juan sat with his back against the boulder. The fire was to his right. The young men apparently knew what was going on, but I didn't have the faintest idea about the procedure to follow when one was dealing with sorcerer's apprentices. I watched the young men. They sat facing Don Juan, making a perfect half circle. I noticed then that Don Juan was directly facing me, and 2 of the young men had sat to my left, and the other 2 to my right. Don Juan began telling them that I was in the lava mountains to learn not doing, and that an ally had been following us. I thought that that was a very dramatic beginning, and I was right. The young men changed positions and sat with their left legs tucked under their seats. I hadn't observed how they were sitting before. I'd assumed that they were sitting the same way I was, cross-legged. A casual glance at Don Juan revealed to me that he was also sitting with his left leg tucked in. He made a barely perceptible gesture with his chin to point at my sitting position. I casually tucked in my left leg. Don Juan had once told me that that was the posture that a sorcerer used when things were uncertain. It had always proved, however, to be a very tiring position for me. I felt it was going to be a terrible imposition on me to remain seated in that fashion for the duration of his talk. Don Juan seemed to be thoroughly aware of my handicap, and in a succinct manner explained to the young men that quartz crystals could be found in certain specific spots in that area, and that once they were found, they had to be coaxed to leave their abode by means of special techniques. The crystals then became the man himself, and their power went beyond our understanding. He said that ordinarily quartz crystals were found in clusters, and that it was up to the man who had found them to choose 5 of the longest and best-looking blades of quartz and sever them from their matrix. The finder was responsible for carving and polishing them in order to make them pointed and to make them fit perfectly to the size and shape of the fingers of his right hand. Then he told us that the quartz crystals were weapons used for sorcery, that they were usually hurled to kill, and that they penetrated the enemy's body and then returned to their owner's hand as though they had never left it. Next, he talked about the search for the spirit that would turn the ordinary crystals into weapons, and said that the first thing one had to do was to find a propitious place to lure out the spirit. That place had to be on a hilltop and was found by sweeping the hand with the palm turned towards the earth, until a certain heat was detected with the palm of the hand. A fire had to be made on that spot. Don Juan explained that the ally was attracted by the flames and manifested itself through a series of consistent noises. The person searching for an ally had to follow the direction of the noises until the ally revealed itself, and then wrestle it to the ground in order to overpower it. It was at that point that one could make the ally touch the crystals to imbue them with power. He warned us that there were other forces at large in those lava mountains, forces which didn't resemble the allies. They didn't make any noise, but appeared only as fleeting shadows, and didn't have any power at all. Don Juan added that a brilliantly colored feather or some highly polished quartz crystals would attract the attention of an ally, but in the long run, any object whatever would be equally effective, because the important part was not to find the objects, but to find the force that would imbue them with power. What's the use of having beautifully polished crystals if you never find the spirit giver of power? He said. On the other hand, if you don't have the crystals, but do find the spirit, you may put anything in his way to be touched. You could put your dicks in the way if you can't find anything else. The young men giggled. The most daring of them, the one who talked to me first, laughed loudly. I noticed that Don Juan had crossed his legs and was sitting in a relaxed manner. All the young men had also crossed their legs. I tried to slip casually into a more relaxed posture, but my left knee seemed to have a pinched nerve or a sore muscle, and I had to stand up and jog on the spot for a few minutes. Don Juan made a joking comment. He said I was out of practice kneeling down.